What's up, dudes? It's the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. I'm Jared Stansberry. It's the seniors. We're here at my apartment on Tripp Street in beautiful Ames, Iowa. Or as my old friend Mel Crippen at KASI says, LA, lovely Ames. What's up, Rob Gray? What's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot. I've been doing a lot of gardening, trying to get out on the bike, following your fine reporting from the tailgate tours and recruiting gauntlet. So, you know, it's my usual late spring, early summer, full summer, being a, I'm not going to say a bum, so I've been very active, mm-hmm. but kind of break from the journalism duties.
What's the furthest we've gone on the bike so far this summer?
I haven't done more than like 16 miles. I ride with my wife a lot, and she doesn't like to progress. We got to that point, and it's a nice ride. Uh-huh. And I'm telling her, you know, we got to do 20, got to do 25, because then we're building up our fitness, right? Uh-huh. She just kind of likes to do the ride, and you maintain your fitness to some degree. I'm going to do at least a 50-miler sometime this summer. I might try to do a day or egg, Bri.
Okay, that'd be fun.
I've been slowly drifting. A few years ago, I really got close to being totally back in shape, and I've been slowly riding the needle uh-huh. with too many beers and too many pizzas and
so
everything else going
the
other way. I might be swearing it off again.
Forever?
So I'm the worst Cyclone Fanatic ever.
Well, it won't last.
Well, exactly. You know, maybe I'll hold it to, you know, a couple scotches.
Yeah.
To chill. You get a little bit older, those empty calories start to creep up on you. And you got to drink a lot of beers. You can relate. I mean, even though you're long and lean, you're carrying a decent amount of weight. So mm-hmm. it's not like you're, you know, if you were a 130-pound person, you know, a few beers, you know, oh, all right, I'm feeling good.
Right.
Takes a few more Busch Lights than that to reach that phase, correct?
Definitely. I walked 6 miles the other day. You're talking about riding your bike. 16.
Intentionally.
No.
Forced.
Yeah.
Forced into the long walk.
Yeah, pretty much. As always, the seniors are brought to you by Performance Concrete Polishing. Check out their showroom down in Urbandale, 1122 Aurora Ave. Give them a call, 515-202-6706, or check them out online at www.performanceconcretepolishing.com. If you've got a concrete surface at your house and it's boring, it's ugly, give these guys a call. Check them out online. They're going to make it look way better. They're going to make it look beautiful.
For sure.
And concrete is not something that normally looks beautiful, but that's what these guys do.
No, it's like miracle workers. Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, I've been out on the Cyclone tailgate tour. I'm going to Marshalltown tomorrow.
You should ride your bike to one of those.
I should not do that. I went to Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
I'd only ever been to Knoxville one other time in my
life. Need to go to Nationals sometime if there's ever a get-together.
Yeah. Definitely.
Sweet. You saw some of the old sprint cars, historic sprint cars at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, correct?
Yeah, I saw one. I did not venture any
further.
Oh,
okay,
and
anymore?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it was something.
Campbell took a little pose there. There are a lot of sprint car runs in Ohio and PA, so families might have been around that a little bit.
For the record, it was both his and Steve Prohm's first times in Knoxville.
Really?
I heard them get asked if it was their first time in Knoxville, Iowa.
Hmm.
And they both said they didn't get much of a chance to explore. That was another question there that they were asked.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard.
I went to Clear Lake last week, too.
Yeah?
The lake looked nice. I don't know. Everybody was telling me that it's gross, though.
Well, there's, you know, runoff and things that can happen, but... you know, it's still a beautiful area. Uh-huh. I mean, the so-called Iowa Great Lakes, very different. I mean, kind of like if you ever been trip to northeast Iowa, Decorah, and even up north from there, it's like Iowa's much more varied landscape-wise than most people think. Mm-hmm. And southwest Iowa has its charm, you know, Clarinda, where my in-laws live, Corning, a lot of places throughout there. And then southeast, you head down toward the Mississippi, Keokuk, those kinds of areas, you know, a lot of neat stuff.
So smoke on the water is dead. That's what we learned on the tailgate tour last week in Clear Lake.
And how many people rejoiced at that? I mean, I think everyone saw it coming.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knew.
Even I did, even though I'm old. I think that tune came out when I was two.
Yeah, 1972.
Okay.
Actually, I looked it up.
Yeah, depending on the month, I was two or three, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a time where that was considered just the meanest killer guitar riff. And, I mean, it still is a good riff. It's an iconic riff. But I can understand how it doesn't play with anybody under the age of 40 at all.
Does it get you pumped?
No. It never really did for me either. I mean, I kind of, in the early years, since no one else used it, it was kind of cool because it does have that building part of just the riff, and then you start to add the drums in and the cymbal and all that. But, yeah, it was torn. And then it started to become associated with all the close losses, the two win season, the three. But, you know, it sort of became the anthem of losing, per se. And I'm sure that, I mean, look, if they kept winning 8-9, people might have been like, yeah, I really wish we had a different entrance song. It wouldn't be like, man, I hate that entrance song.
Uh-huh.
So, R.I.P., Deep Purple's song about fire that broke out at one of their shows in Montreux. It's truly a story. That song is truly a story.
Huh. So what, we were putting together a little bit of an email chain between the Cyclone Fanatic crew.
Yeah, and I really dropped the ball.
Yeah.
I think I must have been out in the garden or something, planting some seeds or something.
So tell the people your selections.
I barely even remember them.
Here, I've got them right here.
I mean, I know I put Turn Down for What just because I knew it would anger. it would make you angry. And I wanted to get a little rise out of you.
You said no Hendrix. Okay, and then you selected a Wiz Khalifa, Go Hard or Go Home by Wiz Khalifa.
I think that's a solid pick.
Solid song. Wild Thing.
That was also kind of a joking deal because we've all talked about how much we love Major League. As a movie, you know, not for me, not as a film, not as a work of art, but just an enjoyable thing to watch.
Right.
And that whole thing with X, the great punk band from L.A., put it together, I think. It brought back memory. I was thinking outside the box. Cleveland, you know, you're always seeing Coach Kuz and, you know, a lot of Cleveland connections there with the Iowa State staff. So I just thought the way Ricky Vaughn came in and it did the So I was just trying to have a little bit of fun with it. But, I mean, I love your pick with Eminem.
Yeah.
Till I Collapse. And our friend Tommy Birch had some nice selections I saw.
Yeah, he did.
In a Register piece he put together. But it's hard for me to come up with a lot of really good contemporary, because I would gravitate more toward hip hop than rock too, but mine is more old school, which wouldn't resonate. It would be like my hip hop pump up tune would be like to people your age. The Smoke on the Water hip-hop tune, you know? And some of my favorites were politically charged, too, like Public Enemy. Like Fight the Power, I think, would be a really cool pump-up tune.
Yeah.
Update of an Isley Brothers more R&B song with a lot of social overtones. It wouldn't really fit, like, a football setting. So I was, I knew I'd enjoy your picks. And I liked a lot of the other selections, to be honest.
Definitely. So we've got a top five list.
Yeah.
Again. Why don't you introduce it for us?
Yeah, should we? Yeah.
Or wait, is there something else you wanted to?
Well, do we want to talk about, you know, some of the stuff like, you know, you talked to Promo about Simeon Carter and that stuff. Hit on that and then close with the top five as we usually do.
For sure. Simeon Carter. I don't know if anybody else took it this way, but that quote that he gave on him. I said passive aggressive, like calling him lazy. Was I reading into that incorrectly, would you say? I don't know if you read it.
Yeah, I read it. I don't know. I wouldn't throw that.
I wouldn't throw the
L term out there. I think what you would say is he wasn't prepared for the level of workload and devotion. Look at that team had. I mean, you look at George Niang and NAS is back, but I mean, everyone on that team, gym rats in all the time. And Simeon Carter comes in, he's highly touted, you know, you figure there's need for some minutes there. And, he just never really got his footing. Didn't have the summer, as you mentioned, importantly in your piece, which set him back too. He could have seen what that culture was like even then,
right.
You know, in that relatively short period. And I think he just wasn't completely prepared for the level of commitment. I mean, it's through the roof. I mean, 100, 100, 100. And I think he worked.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he needs to take that work level to, you know, to another level.
I guess I just, it, the way he worded it made it sound like it was like.
Kind of a little dig.
Like it was charged almost, you know. Even though it wasn't like big time.
It wasn't pointed or anything. It's right. Just the it way was it was just, worded made you say, what he's saying, I'm translating, I think he's saying that guy didn't come close to working hard enough
right. In
his freshman season.
Yeah. That's just kind of what I got out of it. But yeah. I might be wrong. I might be the
well,
only
you,
one
well, you were there,
that.
And I mean, you're pretty good at picking up on vibes. I'm with you there. And I think it's also somewhat natural with a lot of freshmen. Mm-hmm. Not everyone, because we saw how hard George Niang worked. But that had been preceded by years and years of hard work going back to the old the old eighth grade pudgy kid, always having to outwork people. So he was somewhat of an outlier in that stuff. I don't know. I think he's still got the potential, and I think if he becomes the gym rat that many before him have been, has a shot to do some good things. But, of course, we see in the front court, there's a lot more options there. I mean, we knew they'd add pieces, but, some guys there that think can contribute off the bat, and he's really going to have to work hard to find anything approaching major minutes.
Well, here's the thing that that made me think what he was saying that was kind of charged. This is another quote that I didn't include in the story that's currently on the Cyclone Fanatic homepage right now. This is Steve Prohm on Simeon Carter this summer. Quote, I think it's huge. I think it's huge. These 8 weeks for him this summer is big for him to see if he can take a step in the right direction. End quote. Mm. It's that in the right direction. It's like, what does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he in the wrong direction before? that's kind of what I might be reading into it too much,
yeah.
But that's just kind of what it, the vibe it gave to me.
Yeah. I could say, and I'm not totally devil's advocate here. I could see meaning that it felt like he was totally sort of in neutral before.
Yeah.
And not making, it was kind of, he had reached a flat line maybe, and the step in the right direction.
Wouldn't that almost be the same thing is what I'm kind of saying?
It would be very similar, but it doesn't mean he was going in the wrong direction. It just meant he wasn't really – he hadn't really been able to find a path that he can dig into.
And, well, I'm not saying he's, like, ruining his life or anything like that. I'm just saying he wasn't up to the expectation of what they wanted him to be
. No, I could see that, yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully he's working his way up there. Got 8 weeks.
For sure.
Football players will be back on – Tuesday, I think, after Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to start heating up, too.
Yeah, hopefully none of them get too crazy on Memorial Day weekend, long weekend.
Better knock on some wood now. There you go. Hopefully everyone
You didn't do it,
that.
I noticed.
I didn't need to. You're the one that said it.
Okay. You can knock on wood.
You're the one that's creating all the bad juju in here.
You just said Simeon Carter doesn't work at all.
But I 100% believe that he can. I didn't say it was him. I didn't say it. I'm just saying what I read into the quote.
All right. Glad we got our conflict out of the way.
Are you calling me a hater?
You were calling me one. All I was saying, I was having some fun because, sometimes certain weekends and certain things,
I wasn't calling you a hater. I'm just saying you're throwing a lot of bad juju around.
Jeez. I might have to try to take you one-on-one since Adam actually took you to the brink. Does he have a better jump shot than you expected?
Here's what was happening. So, if Adam was open, it wasn't going in. And in fact, it was more likely to be an air ball than it was going in. But the second I stepped up and put a hand in his face, the second that I smacked his arm, if he was trying to shoot a three, going in every time. I did not, I don't
so
know.
So he responds to pressure.
Apparently.
Did you put in like an Iowa State versus UAB level performance by your standards yourself?
Oh, yeah. And game one was awful. I mean, he was there were times when on offense, I started shooting jumpers and I was stupid. And I won 11-2. And I was like, I'm done shooting jumpers.
And you thought you were going to roll after that, but Adam, resilient.
Well, we played to 8 in that last game, and I'd forgotten we were playing to 8 until the game was almost over. Mm. And we were only playing to 8 because Adam is old, and he said he couldn't. He didn't even want to play a game 3. He was done.
He was ready to call it a draw.
He said that we need to wait for game three until people can be here. But I think he just wanted to. He wanted more time to be fresh. He knew he wasn't going to be able to beat me in that last game.
Alternatively, he might have thought he was going to beat you, so he wanted everyone to see it.
But if we play...
And he would have had extra time to work out and get some shots up?
Yeah. I didn't even, like... Literally, we showed up at the park. I put my shoes on.
Yeah.
And we played.
Yeah.
I think I threw down a dunk, and then we played. So...
I wish I could have been there to do some video. It's just kind of late notice, and I'd been committed to some family stuff. And
I wish you could have seen... Okay, so Adam is, for some reason, likes to reach. So I kept getting him with my cross.
Yeah.
And then I missed two dunks off of this. Mm-hmm. I threw it too hard off the back iron.
Okay, yeah.
And so the last play of the game, he tries to reach on my cross again. And I get around him and inadvertently put an elbow straight into his face. And then I went up off one foot and two-hand tomahawk slam, yeah. Let out a primal yell as I came down. And when I turned around, I saw Adam laying on the ground. And everything changed. I thought I'd killed him.
That had to have been a good feeling.
It did, honestly. Like, once I knew that he was okay.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want it, of course.
Right.
Anyone to be.
I thought he was going to call a foul on me, though. I probably would have been very unhappy.
Yeah. Well, an inadvertent elbow is still an elbow.
He was like, no, it's all good. It was inadvertent. I shouldn't have even put my face in there.
See, Adam manned up. You were gracious, just as you were in the flip cup deal.
Neither one of us really called fouls. So it was pretty physical, but. You know,
that's the way to do it.
Right.
But kudos to him for hanging in with the big fella.
It was he's no small guy either.
He's 6'2", isn't he?
Yeah, he's 6'2", 6'3". He told me he's hurting today though. Mm. Said his Achilles is hurting again.
Uh-oh.
Not he doesn't think it's like anything serious. Yeah. Tendonitis.
Yeah.
What would we say if it was baseball? Like
day to day.
Yeah, day to day. Yeah, there we go. Maybe put him on the 15-day DL.
Mm, yeah, maybe come off early. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so you want to switch gears to this?
Yeah, let's do this. I mean, this was your idea, though. I'd like you to intro it.
Yeah, it was. So top five sports moments you wish you could change. Or I guess we didn't really even like think of any parameters for this. We kind of just had the idea, and then we just. We were just going to roll with it.
Our free form, our freestyle approach, yes, yeah. To this.
Yeah.
So I have some pro picks. I have a couple Iowa State picks, some big honorable mentions. And I think we're going to hit different ones nicely.
Yeah, for sure. All right. You want to hit me with some honorable mentions? I don't really have any.
Yeah. I mean, my honorable mentions, because, I this time of year, to me, football is on the brain. Mm-hmm. So I got a couple football things in the top five. Iowa State football things, but my obvious honorable mentions are, this is the time machine thing. If we could go back and change anything, what would we do? And obviously I would change the travesty of the NCAA putting an Iowa State team, that won the Big 12, in the same, basically in a bracket that would end up at the Palace of Auburn Hills in the Elite Eight with Michigan State. And we saw how that game went down at the end and some very iffy calls. And I'm convinced, and people said it afterwards, I mean, I'm not sure if it was Izzo, but other Michigan State players, national media, those were the two best teams in the country. And I think if that goes down, say, in Salt Lake City or, God forbid, St. Louis or, I think Iowa State might pull that off, and who knows, there might be an actual national championship banner hanging in Hilton Coliseum. So that's a big honorable mention for me. And in all honesty, it would be a top five for sure. But I, kind of put together a list that I felt was representative across a few other things. And then, of course, the injury stuff. If George Niang doesn't get hurt, obviously, against North Carolina Central a few years back, that's with Sweet 16 run that ended against UConn. Very valiant effort by the Cyclones, despite off nights from Melvin Edgem and DeAndre Kane. you know, Dustin Hoge, the game of his life. A lot of good memories from that game, given how competitive they were against the eventual national champions. Same time, I think they're a better team than UConn. Mm-hmm. Georgia's healthy, they're a better team than UConn. And that scratched your head, as Fred has said many, many times. He's convinced they would have won the national title. And then if you change those two things, Iowa State has two national championship banners hanging from the rafters at Hilton, which is mind-boggling, really, to think about, but not that far off. So those are my honorable mentions, and obviously truly top fives, but I just wanted to get these other five out there.
Okay, you want to start it off?
Yeah, I'll start off, and I'm going to another school in the state, just because I was intimate with it. I was covering the University of Northern Iowa Panthers on a stirring run to the FCS championship game.
Where was the championship game held?
It was in Chattanooga.
Okay.
And I was at the Register, and Sean Keeler came as a columnist, and I remember as we were driving through all the country roads and getting a little bit more to feeling like the South, I'd roll a little dueling banjos music at him. I'd go, and he'd just look at me, stop. And we had a good time there. And you and I had been on an incredible run. They beat Texas State, I believe it was in overtime, to get to that game. Texas State's offensive coordinator at the time was Tom Herman. I remember asking him about a weird decision Texas State made at the end of that game, and he said, and he just looked at me and this, like a stone cold look on his face, and said, "Wasn't my call." So obviously, think of what he's gone on to.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you and I was just a team that got by on grit. They had a lot of great talent, and I'm not going to go into a lot of the players other than Eric Sanders, quarterback. I mean, a lot of really good players, a lot of Iowans on that team, and then sprinkled in some high-level guys at skill positions and in the secondary. And they just got by teams. They had no business beating New Hampshire, which was a fun trip to do too, but they made the key plays when they had to, a turnover here, a turnover there.
Was Chip Kelly coaching there?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think, although I really wasn't paying attention to who the head coach was. So I mean,
because that's where he was before he went to Oregon.
Well, this was, I want to say, 304. We can look up what the date is. And you see, this is what happens when you get old, too. I can remember so much for this run and certain plays, but it's hard for me to remember exactly which year it was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they'd win these games, and they were right there, and then it's Appalachian State, with a really, really, really great team. They were in the middle of a kind of a magical run for them at the national championship level, which the Bison of North Dakota State have kind of blown up with their five straight.
He was the offensive coordinator at New Hampshire from 1999 to 2006.
So he would have been the OC. So the Panthers beat teams coordinated by Chip Kelly and Tom Herman.
Yep.
En route to a narrow loss to Appalachian State, another team that kind of out-athleted them but could not, you know, match their grit. They had enough grit, though, to hang on, and the Panthers, you know, took it right down to the wire.
Yep.
It was just a fun thing to cover and be a part of. And that program, you know, was always pretty good. But that was if I could change anything, it would be that somehow they won that national championship. And, you know, I have a lot of good friends there in Cedar Falls.
2005.
Be happy about it.
Appalachian State would be the – was that the team that beat Michigan?
I don't think it was the same year.
Or was it the year before that?
It might have been the year before.
Because they won a couple national championships in a row.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an out-of-the-box. Clearly, if I could change time, the honorable mentions, I'd change before that. Mm-hmm. But I'm just kind of enmeshing personal history, you know, being actually there into the top five.
All right, my number five, I wasn't even alive at this time, but Don Dankecher with the awful call in Game 6 of the 1985 World Series between the Cardinals and the Royals. The Royals would go on to win Game 7, win the series. Cardinals wouldn't win another World Series until 2006.
Yeah. Let me get out my violin as a Cubs fan. But, yeah, that was a terrible call. It's haunted Dankecher for years.
Yeah.
Just blew it, you know. And what can you say?
And it's one of those situations where – you look at it and you're like, Yeah, the Cardinals probably should have won the next night in Game 7.
Yep.
Anyway, I mean, you still got the chance here at home, you know. But it was the Royals' thing once the bad call was made.
And it's hard when it's outside of your control, too.
Right.
I mean, that's why people can, you know, the call the ref didn't make or did make that was wrong in your mind isn't as important as the turnover that happened 45 seconds earlier in the basketball game or the error that happened in baseball, you know, in the earlier inning that allowed the team to get an extra run that they wouldn't have been the same game without it. But because you want it to be perfect. I mean, none of us are perfect, but we kind of demand that sometimes even of our teams.
Right.
But let alone the people who are paid to officiate over them. And it's kind of a sad life lesson, you know. Sometimes that is a perfect case of it's not fair. Not fair. But then what's your response to what's that's not fair?
Right.
Rather than wallowing in it. And clearly the Cardinals have always been good and bounced back, but those things stick with you, of course.
All right, so who's your number four?
My number four, I'll go back to when I was a little kid. So it was horse and buggy days. Super Bowl IX. My Vikings had been kind of a mainstay in the Super Bowl. Can you believe it? Super Bowl IX? I was alive for Steelers, Steel Curtain, incredible defense. Vikings, Purple People Eaters, incredible defense. Two great NFL quarterbacks, Terry Bradshaw on one side, Fran Tarkenton, Vikings. Two great coaches. You got two great running backs, Franco Harris for the Steelers, Chuck Foreman, Vikings. 16-6 Steelers win, but it's 2-0 at halftime, I believe. Vikings, Tarkenton got taken down in the end zone. So the defenses are ruling this game, and Steelers add a touchdown. Vikings block a punt. Vikings can't get any offense the entire game. Block a punt, recover it in the end zone, it's 9-6. And in true Vikings fashion, which we didn't know, certainly at the time, I'm 5-6 years old, that this is how the Vikings roll. Immediately, the Steelers grind out basically the only relatively long drive of the game. I can't remember who scored the touchdown for them. I'm pretty sure it wasn't Franco. Cement the game. There's really no way. I mean, you know, there's no spread. There's no real 2 minute. You know, once they were up 16, that's it. And you look back at that, the Vikings haven't had a Super Bowl since late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It's so close, you know. And if I could have changed anything, it would be like, you know, somehow Chuck Foreman plays out of his mind. Or the O-line is so good that Chuck Foreman rushes for 160 yards and 3 touchdowns and the Vikings pull off the game. Or the Vikings had a mishap as well that helped the Steelers. I think it was a fumbled kickoff early in the second half that led to their touchdown before the ceiling one. So as a Vikings fan, that one stings. There's a game, Chiefs. I mean, early Super Bowls, the Vikings really had a shot. They really didn't have a shot against the Raiders in the late 70s. And then, of course, since they always do their choke job in the NFC Championship.
All right, my number four is Game 6 of the 2002 Western Conference Finals.
Okay.
One of the games allegedly fixed by referees in the NBA. Tim Donaghy.
Tim Donaghy, yeah.
And another official.
Yeah.
Deciding the series needed to go to 7 games between the Sacramento Kings and the LA Lakers, and Lakers would win the series, went on to win their 3rd consecutive title.
Yeah.
But pretty much was the end of one of the best rivalries the NBA has seen in a long time.
Mm. That's a good point. And just such an awful way to do it. I mean, it's one thing for an official to make a mistake.
Right.
I mean, it's another
thing. The Lakers shot 18 more free throws in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
Than the Kings did.
And, I had totally forgotten how good some of those Kings teams were, maybe because the Kings have been so bad in most of the recent years. But, just think, it changes everything if the Lakers don't win that one. I mean, obviously they won a lot of others, and deservedly so. But, that's a good one.
Yeah. Okay, who you got number three?
I'm going to go with my first Iowa State football one, and there'll be a theme. I'm not sure if it would count as a conference championship, winning the Big 12 North. Probably wouldn't, since there's a championship game. But it might. It might count as you'd call it a co-champion. You know, there'd be a South champion, North champion. But I'll put Missouri at Iowa State for the Big 12 North at number 3. And the Cyclones are right there, intercepted late, basically the end. You know, you're right there with a chance to win. I mean, Paul Rhodes, when he was coach, referenced, not a lot of fans in the stands, even though they're playing for a Big 12 North title. But just imagine the juice that the Cyclones would have had after that, let alone another win. Mm-hmm. They went on to win the, the Independence Bowl that year. I believe I helped cover that with the Register. Miami Redhawks. grueling 17-13 game. I might have the score wrong, but I think that's what it was. Brett Meyer had a great year, and obviously a lot of great receivers. The defense was rock solid. But gosh, I mean, and then of course it's going to obviously tie into something. But you're right there. It's right there for the taking, and you just don't get it done. And I mean, kudos to Iowa State fans in recent years. But to think back at those times, I mean, that's a big deal to mm-hmm. be playing for any type of title, and the interest just wasn't as strong. And I can't put my finger on exactly why, but you know, now they were 50,000 plus almost every game, even last season after finishing up a third straight season of subpar win loss, you know, standings, everything else. So that was a tough one.
Imagine how lit it would be if they played in a game like that now.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, it would be bananas.
Yeah.
And particularly if they had those divisions and it comes down to that game at Jack Trice Stadium.
Right.
Sure, they'd play it at night. Oh, my gosh. The atmosphere would night and day difference.
Mm-hmm. My number 3 is it's a double number 3. Nebraska losing the 2009 and 2010 – or 2010-2011 Big 12 championship games. Mm. The 1 second added back to the clock against Texas in 2010, that was 2009. Sorry, it mm-hmm. was 2009, 2010, and then I think they scored the first 29 or 21 points against Oklahoma in 2011, and then Oklahoma came back to win in Nebraska's last Big 12 game
by their own choice.
Yeah,
but yeah, that had to hurt as a. As a Husker fan, both of those. I mean, when any time you're putting time back on the clock, people have started celebrating. Ugh.
The 2009 game, I was at Winter Formal at Clarinda High School, watching the game on the tube television hanging on the wall in the lunchroom.
Nice.
That got very spotty
So you'd have like a snowy picture and bars would start moving on it and all that.
Right, but that's where I watched most of the game and got down to the final seconds. And Dom Kinsu chased Colt McCoy down, forced him to throw it out of bounds, and the game was over, man. I mean,
I'm trying to remember when they showed the replays. I seem to remember saying, I suppose it's possible they could add a second, but I don't really think they should.
No.
Based on what it looked like and when it landed and all that stuff.
Right. That's kind of what I
wonder
said,
how much that played into Nebraska wanting to get the heck out of
a
Texas'
lot.
Shadow.
A lot, yeah.
I mean, because that's a – and imagine Iowa State is in that situation and the ball goes out of bounds. They're going to put a second back. I'm not trying to be a
it
conspiracy
was like the
theorist,
most,
but I mean, come on.
It would be the most Iowa State thing ever. And at the time, like with – a lot of the things that had kind of happened around Nebraska, it was like the most Nebraska thing ever. You know, and then the next year they come back and they play the game at Texas A&M where they got called for like 8 personal fouls. Mm. And Taylor Martinez sprained his ankle again and Bo Pelini stood on the sidelines and berated him after he called his dad in the locker room.
Yeah.
The next day everybody thought Taylor Martinez was gone, if only he had been. and then... Yeah, then they get up against Oklahoma. They should have won that game too. That 2009 team, if they wouldn't have literally had, like, I think we could have played quarterback for their offense and been better than they were.
Yeah.
But that defense was otherworldly.
Oh, they went through some lean years at quarterback.
Right.
They have gone through some lean years at quarterback.
But, I mean, that they had, like, when they had Sue and Jared Crick and, shoot, I can't, I mean, DeJon Gomes. I mean, it's like a bunch of guys that are still playing in the NFL now. And they had some defenses that were better than Alabama, you know. But they couldn't score any points.
Tough deal.
Until Taylor Martinez came in with his blazing speed.
Yeah. I have a feeling you're not going to get a lot of sympathy from the Fanatic.
No, I won't. I don't care. But, I mean, I'm over it now. You know, it's been 6 and 7 years.
Yep.
So I've moved on. But still.
Yeah, you're coming off a bowl win.
I just know what.
You're coming off a bowl
win. Well, it's not even that. Like I don't care about it. I just, you know, when I wanted to make my list, I was thinking, what were the things that had me the most, like,
distraught?
Distraught, yeah. And at the time, I was broken. I was broken down by that, you know. Yeah. And
it'll continue to happen less as you cover more things.
Well, it already does. Yeah, I'm not affected by anything really like that now. But at the time, it cut me deep. No, let's move on. I'm done with this. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
I'll do to my number two, which of course ties into number three, and that's having the lead on Kansas, which it was not Kansas. The Kansas of can't win a Big 12 game, you know. Solid Kansas team down there, I believe. Another big chance at a Big 12 North title following season, and let Kansas come back into the game. Missed field goal for Iowa State. Kansas wins in overtime.
I remember that game. Watching it on TV.
It's a game that Iowa State should have won. They were in position to win and somehow didn't win. Mm-hmm. And this year, that year they went to the Houston Bowl, I believe, and lost to TCU by 3. That was a team, and I was talking to Austin Flynn for a, you know, I'd like to call it like catching up with. Mm-hmm. We're calling it maybe a Where Are They Now kind of series that we're going to do once a month with a lot of former Cyclones.
Who else is a popular one? You got anybody else that's like that you might want to tease that you've got in
there? I only tease one
month at a time.
Advance.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Fair
but,
enough.
But Austin was gracious enough to sit down with me in his offices at Grandview, where they won a national championship with, you know, the Woodleys. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of Iowa State flavor around that program, which they've built from the ground up at the NAIA level. But you talked about that, particularly the one against Kansas, because you're in a position to win it. And Brett Culbertson, who'd missed the kick, he was the holder, who missed the kick. Of course, he'd won games. You know, he did single-handedly won an Iowa game, I believe, the previous year. And he made tons of great kicks. That's the hard life of a kicker, you know. It's like we look at Cole Nett and people, what's most in everyone's memory, probably the miss against Toledo. Well, think about the year before where he, Kinnick, talk about pressure. He hits the game-winning kick. His time expires, so it's the peaks and valleys of being a kicker. I know I mentally couldn't handle it. So even if a guy is a 50-50 guy, kicking field goals at any type of level with any kind of pressure, my hat's off to them. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what Austin said. We talked to him a lot about a lot of stuff, and that'll be dropping late this month. That's going to be kind of the schedule for the – I'm pushing to call it catching up with Ellipsis, who it is, because I think everyone kind of knows where he is, and a number of these people will kind of know where they are. Now, we would call Steel Jantz, Where Are They Now? And that comes around. But, you know, many, many thanks to Austin for sitting down with me. But that Kansas game, I mean, gosh, and to think about it, if you could change that, and you would change number three two times, back-to-back Big 12 North champions. Your record is higher going into the postseason. You're going to get a better bowl prospect. You know, just a lot of – a lot of positives could have come out of that, and totally in position to win both those games.
Do you follow Steel Jantz on Instagram?
I did follow him on Instagram.
I saw that he posted recently.
He did. I think he joined recently, and he posted recently.
There you go.
Steel is starting to emerge from the shadows, so to speak, and we've teased that. There's going to be a time is right for me to try to reach out to his camp again, as I did in the past. But I'm not one of those guys that browbeats people. You know, it's just like boom, 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 boom. And then that wouldn't work with a guy like that. That would make him retreat, mm-hmm. I think, and be like, you know, you have to kind of gently nut and just be like, hey, you know, probably nice to catch up with you. And
yeah.
People still remember you fondly, you know. They're, you know,
everybody wants to know what you're up to.
Yeah, yeah. And so many other things. He was a part of a lot of big wins. And that arm, I mean.
Even though, like, he didn't win that many games, nobody has you rarely ever hear anybody say something negative about him.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. He was a gamer, a competitor right. beyond belief. And he was, let's not forget, he was banged up a lot of that time, too. I mean, when Sam Richardson replaced him, he could, I think he barely had, he basically had one functioning arm. His ankle had been banged up or foot, whatever it was. You know, so, you know, the throw he had to Josh Lenz, I believe, to avert a loss to you and I in that Iowa game, where the words contain, contain, contain echoed in vain in Kirk Ferentz's mind and Hawkeye fans' mind. You know, those are all-time wins, even though, yes, you should beat you and I the way it happened. I mean, the way he threw that ball, I mean, he's one of the greats in a way, you know what I mean? And yeah, like you said, you don't hear people saying, oh, man, Steel Chance should have won this game and this game. You
know? He's like a...
I forgot an honorable mention before was what if Jake Knott doesn't get hurt his senior season?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what a hero he was in that Baylor game to play so hurt and gets a fumble and basically cemented bowl eligibility, because then I think they went to Kansas and beat a very bad Kansas team to technically do it. But if he doesn't get hurt, that team really has a chance to be like an 8-win team, I think. And he'd been banged up before that, so it was affecting his performance, and unfortunately that carried over. That was an aside. We could talk about Steel forever, though.
All right, my number two. Shaq leaving Orlando.
Mm.
I would tell him to stay.
Yeah.
Keep Penny and Shaq together. And here's my troll. Kobe wouldn't have won his first three titles then.
That's true.
Troll job for everybody out there.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Yeah, if Orlando could have... Yeah, because Penny Hardaway was such a dynamic player.
Yeah.
Then you build around those guys. I don't know. The lure of the Lakers, though.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the storied franchises.
Have you watched the new 30 for 30 about those guys?
I have not, but I'm sure I will.
Yeah, you should. It's very good. Very good.
Yeah, that's a nice one, outside the box. As a bigger NBA fan, I was a big NBA fan when the Celtics were in their glory years, and Bird and the Bad Boys of the Pistons, and, you know, the matchups with the Lakers and all that for the Celtics and others. But, yeah. Nice thought. Yeah, I mean, Orlando could have become they could have become a kind of a revered NBA franchise.
Right. And instead,
the Lakers add.
Kobe wrote Shaq's coattails to some titles, and everybody calls him the GOAT.
Yeah. He did. Now, for some of those titles, Kobe was the point man. But Shaq, yeah. I mean, without Shaq, there's no way. I agree. I mean, that's why they got Shaq.
Because
they knew they needed him. A guy with that type of dominating presence.
All right, who's your number one?
My number one goes to my baseball team, the Chicago Cubs. I'm a Red Sox fan, too, via my dad. So I was suffering for a long time until breakthrough in 2004 for the Red Sox. But 2003 Cubs. You got the Bartman thing, which you can just call it fate. Look, Moises Alou was a bad enough outfielder. I'm not sure he catches that ball right up against the bricks. The one I would change, if anything, is Alex Gonzalez's error at shortstop that follows, because that's it. They're out of it. Instead, Mark Pryor, his career basically ends. He gives up hit after hit after hit after hit after hit. Game over. Like you said, though, game six. That's game six of the NLCS. Cubs have a chance to come back in game seven. They have a lead in game seven. They're at home. They lose. So, you know, as Cub fans, we have to stop feeling. There's no worse thing you can be, or there's no worse thing you can adopt than a feeling of a victim. You know, you can be wronged, fine, and that as the wronged implies, it's wrong. It shouldn't happen. But at some point, you have to not wallow in that feeling. And in 2003, they wallowed in that feeling. Think about how Bartman got berated and death threats, and I mean, he's been in seclusion ever since. He did what almost any fan would do, which is kind of be like this. And it wasn't like he was, his arms were parallel to the ground. They were just like barely reaching to the side of his body. I mean, not much. Almost any fan would do that. It's a natural reaction. Get somebody out after that. You know, they had a chance right there. Muff the play. Then every fan, as a Cubs fan, you're the victim, right? So I'm watching and I'm like, oh my God, they're doomed. That's the response you have as a Cubs fan. Hoping this year's team can change it. They're in a rough stretch, 4-8 over your Cardinals. Real that Adams SOB took Lackey deep to tie the game, and then the Cubs blow a chance. Cardinals come through.
Randall Gritchett.
Here's me as a Cubs fan putting that V on me again. Watching that game, he comes to the plate. I take one look at him, and I say, he's going to end this game right now with a solo shot.
Yep.
Happens. What I say doesn't have any bearing on what happens. But that's my natural thought. Even though the Cubs have the best record in baseball, even though I truly believe they are built for a championship and they are going to get one in the next couple years, that's, you know, they got to get that one for it to change. And then Cubs fans will be as insufferable as anyone. You know, like Red Sox fans, people used to have sympathy for them, but then you win the title, you win three titles. And when you've worn that V again for so long, then it swings the other way to a bit of almost arrogance, and it bothers people. But I'm waiting to see that happen. Kudos to your Cardinals last night, though.
I almost want the Cubs to win a title because I think people would back off them a little bit. Would they be less nuts about it? And less arrogant about it once they won one. Because you guys have never experienced this before.
No, not since 1907 and 1908.
That's what I'm saying.
But you mean that Cubs are arrogant about losing?
No, I'm just saying that once you guys are getting good now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And everybody's come out of the woodwork, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody's a Cubs fan.
Oh,
now.
Come on.
No, it's
Cubs
true.
Fans have been
it's
very,
true.
Cubs fans have been all over Central Iowa for
okay,
a
but
long
you
time.
You didn't hear anybody talking about the Cubs 24/7, but when the Cubs were losing 100 games.
No. And I mean, you didn't hear, I mean, let's say the Cardinals went through a stretch where they'd lose 100 games, which will never happen, for a prolonged period. No one would talk about them either.
No.
I mean, unless it's right after. Like, it wasn't too many years ago the Twins were a perennial playoff contender, and they've been really bad, and they're atrocious this year. People are still talking about it because they're so angry.
This is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that it's new right now for everybody. In the recent history, the Cubs have been bad. So they're good again, and it's new. Everybody's excited. But if they go and they win a title, it won't be as new anymore. It's just like the Royals were.
Yeah.
Everybody all of a sudden was a Royals
fan. Yeah. I think you're colored by social media too.
Yeah.
Because the Cubs did get those playoff years. It didn't become that irregular. You know, they get there in 84 below that too. I mean, good Lord, they were one of the best teams in baseball that year. Leon Durham between the legs. So many things they did to blow 84, their playoff series. 89, you got the late 90s a couple times with Pinella, the team that was built to hit home runs and strike out constantly and had decent pitching. So anytime they get in the playoffs, they get swept immediately by the three best pitchers. And the opposing team, they couldn't strike out. You know, so this team is sort of built like that, but they can walk. So they work you. And that's going to reap dividends. And it's better pitching. I mean, their pitching, I think, is rock solid, generally speaking. But I get what you're saying there. But do you get what I mean? But it's heightened by social media. If there'd been social media
for sure.
In the middle of that, I mean, you're not talking. Look, they went from their last World Series title of 45 to 1984 without a playoff appearance. Now, granted, there weren't as many options to get in the playoffs. You had the two divisions, and in some cases, I think you just had the league when you go back closer to 45. So there weren't as many opportunities, but at the same time, you get 84, you get 89, you get, I think it was 98, 99. I think they had a one-game playoff they lost somewhere in there. And then 03, and then it's been since then until last year. So it's been like decade span of 3 decades.
Didn't they go with like Alfonso Soriano? And Derek Lee, didn't they have some teams that made the playoffs?
Well,
they definitely did.
Oh, yeah. What I'm saying is just when you're looking at gaps.
Oh, yeah.
Your gaps aren't nearly as long as they were. And now you've got social media. So you got fans that get kind of close and they come back down to being crappy again. And then they go back up and they come back down to being crappy again.
I'm just saying that, like, with the Cardinals, like, I don't, from day to day, I don't fret over whether or not the Cardinals are winning. I don't think that there's that many people that do.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Cubs, like, you, they lose on a walk-off to the Cardinals, and you see people, like, visibly upset on Twitter that they just lost
because
on a walk-off
to
the Cardinals.
Because they,
and they've lost however many, I mean, you said they're in a slump. I don't even know.
Yeah, they've won 4 of their last 12, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's just what I'm saying.
Yep. Nope, I totally agree with that. They'll be less wrapped up in the day-to-day.
Yeah. And, so now we've talked about the Cubs for like 10 minutes, but
we talked about the Cardinals for a while. That's okay. Not 10 minutes. So,
by the way, Randall Grichuk's going to be really good. He's my new guy.
He's built.
I've kind of given up on this season, but, Cardinals need to get younger.
Yeah.
Collectively.
Yeah. You might squeak into the playoffs. I think the Pirates are a little bit better team.
Yeah. Maybe that second wild card spot. Yeah. The NL Central is good enough usually that you can maybe
get last
both
year.
Of them. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So my number one, Gordon Hayward's last second shot against Duke in the 2010 or 2011 national championship game. Inches.
Yeah.
And I really wanted Duke Butler to win.
Yeah.
I was a big Butler guy.
Yeah, that was, you thought that was going in.
It was going in, dude. Till the very last second.
And somehow Duke.
Yeah.
You know, and who wants to, you know, God bless him, you know, whatever. I mean, great tradition. But how great would that have been? You're right. To get the Butler Bulldogs to knock off the Duke Blue Devils.
Mm-hmm. On a last
I'd kind of forgotten about that.
Heave.
Yeah, because I didn't really have a stake in it either.
I didn't have a stake either, but it was just
But it was just a great game, and you were watching. But, yeah, man. And it felt like Butler was going to win.
Yeah.
A lot of that game. Not that they had a big lead, but, I mean, I remember feeling like, oh, my God, Butler's going to knock
after they won in the Final Four, I was convinced they were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they won their final four game pretty handily.
They were I think they were a better team than Duke that year too.
Yeah, I mean, they were good.
Yeah,
I don't think people are gonna think back and remember them being that good. They're gonna think of them more as a Cinderella.
Yep.
But that
because
was
they're Butler. Yeah.
That was a very legit basketball team. You know, Gordon Hayward is one of the best players in the NBA now.
Yeah.
And yeah,
anything he did to take one of those banners away from
you. It's crazy to think if he would have came back
you.
That next year. They still made the national championship game again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they probably get over the top then.
I want to know what happened to Matt Howard, the big man.
Yeah.
Former that had the big floppy hair. That might be my thing for this afternoon. I'm going to figure out what happened to Matt Howard.
Yeah, figure out.
Yeah. All right, so that's our top five. Everybody hit us with theirs on Twitter. Hit us with more suggestions. We've got a couple left. When are you going to be gone? When are you going to be gone this summer?
I'll be gone parts of June. Late July, early August, up until fall camp stuff. That should be about it.
So, how many times do you think?
Probably three.
Three? Okay.
Yeah.
So, I got to find three co-hosts.
Mm-hmm. Or one co-host for three times.
No, I got to get three different ones.
Okay. Well, as far as the list, I want to, again, thank everyone for putting them out there. I know we got one we got to get to. We got one that was submitted to us that would be kind of hard for us to discuss, but we do appreciate the submission. It was food for thought. There's no doubt about that. But we appreciate those a big time.
For sure. You got anything else to add?
Not
Will you
really.
Be here next week?
I'll be here next week.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Thanks for listening, guys.